I'd like to invite up Frank Chapman. Frank Chapman is the education director of the Chicago Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression. Give it up for Frank.
Thank you. Okay, I came up here to do a very special mission. I gave two people some buckets for, we're going to raise some funds right now. But let me tell you why we're going to raise some funds. We're going to start a campaign this summer that's going to be nothing like Chicago has ever seen before. We're going to organize in every ward. There's 50 of them. We're going to organize in all 50 wards. CPAC committees. You hear me? CPAC committees. We are going to get this ordinance passed. And the reason why I know we're going to get it passed, because they just had a citywide public hearings. It was 5 of them. And they thought they was going to beat us back with those hearings. We kicked their butts at every last one of those hearings. They had hearings way on the north side, where the neighborhoods are predominantly white. They knew they were going to get us over there. They said, we're going to get them over here. We beat them over there. We beat the police in their own territories, what they think of their territories. In reality, they ain't got no territories. They don't have no turf in this city. This city belongs to us, and it's time for us to take it back. And that's what we're going to do this summer. We're going to start the process of taking this city back. We don't need no police military occupying our communities and killing our people like they're animals. We don't need that. We don't need that. But we got to show them we don't need that. We got to show them we don't need that. Because, see, it ain't about running your mouth. It's about action. So you're going to get a chance this summer to have some action. We ain't talking about put your money where your mouth is. We talking about put your butt where your mouth is. You know, we need some action. Action. We got skin in the game, brother. You heard it right up here. You part of that. You heard it. This is the skin in the game right here. That's why, this is the fuel of our movement, what you just heard. That's why we're not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere because nobody has got justice yet. Bertha said it when she was up here. None of those police have been punished. They have murdered people, they've tortured people, but they haven't been punished. Are you going to help me punish them?
Yes.
Are we going to punish them?
Yes.
Are the people going to do this?
Yes.
All right. So put something in that basket when it come by you. All right? Put something in that basket when it come by you. Has everybody had a chance to contribute? Because I don't want to leave unless you have. Everybody had a chance to contribute? Okay. You see that sign right there? It says guilty. 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 He shot this child, this 17-year-old child, 16 times on video. And the police department fired him, and the Fraternal Order of Police hired him back. So that's what this movement is all about. It's about getting him also convicted. And like Tyrone was saying, see, he feeling the pain because he went to jail over this. Like he was saying, we got to show up in that courtroom. So y'all got to be with us, not just today, but from here on out in this struggle. You got to show up. You got to make your presence felt. Thank you very much.
Up next, we have Gregory Banks, who's a police torture victim and a survivor.
Good afternoon, everybody. When it comes to me, telling my story is always hard. And the reason why it is so hard, because it nobody believed us. It took a long, long time before people started to believe in us. In 1983, I was arrested and taken to Area 2 Violent Crime and placed in an interviewing room. At approximately maybe 12:30 that going into the next day, 3 detectives came and got me and took me into another police, another room adjacent to that room. And they set me down and they said, we know you did this. We want you to tell us why you did it. And so when I persisted in denial, John Byrne took out a nickel-plated 45 and he stuck it in my mouth. When he took it out, he said, okay, you're going to tell us what we want to know. When I continued to persist in denial, he took out a black flashlight about this long. And he started beating me across my chest and my back. I fell out of the chair. Now, remember, I'm handcuffed all this time. Charles Grunhardt, which was the oldest of the three, Charles Grunhardt began to kick me, step all over my body. They did all sorts of things to me. And when I persisted in denial, I said that I would never forget this detective. His name was Peter Dignan. Peter Dignan said, we got something special for niggas. He took out a plastic bag and placed it over my head. Now imagine, I'm 20 years old, I'm handcuffed, I'm scared to death because I don't know what they're going to do to me. And now they done put a plastic bag over my head. I passed out under the plastic bag. They take it off my head and they leave out of the room. Every time I sing Peter Dignan, I'm telling you, and I don't know if I will ever forgive him because I haven't forgiven him. I haven't forgiven him. John Burge, I haven't forgiven John Burge. I told myself that I did, but I haven't forgiven him, and it's been 35 years. That's a long time for me to have that kind of hatred for them because of what they did to me and what they continue to do to me and to a whole lot of people. It's a lot of individuals that are still locked up. Anyway, I was, they come back into the room and they repeated the same thing. But not only have they put plastic bags over our heads, they got a black box that they use. And it's got a paw, it's a wire on it, and it's got prongs on it. They either put them on your ears or they'll take them and put them on your testicles. And it's got a ring, and they will roll it, and the electricity will come out of it, and it feels like you're being electrocuted. That is a human rights violation. You cannot. I live in America. We live in America. You cannot treat me like that. You cannot continue to treat us like we are not human beings. We are human beings. We have feelings, and you think that we don't have feelings? What are y'all? I mean, who? I'm saying every time I think about this, and I think about this every single day, that they continue to do that. Now they was doing that in back rooms where could nobody see them. Now they blowing your brains out and getting away with it. You cannot continue to kill us and think that there's not going to be any retribution. God is going to rain down some terror on you that you have never seen before in your life. And it's coming. It's going to come. And it might come from us. We don't know. It may come from us. But you ain't going to continue to keep doing us like that. It has to end. And it will end. Subsequently, I went to court. Anyway, I went to the county jail, and when I got to the county jail, the paramedics seen me and they asked me, what happened to you? My body was swollen. My legs were swollen from them beating me. My arms were swollen. And I told them that the police had beat me and put plastic bags over my head and electric prods on me. So what they did, what the paramedic did, he said, when I get upstairs or whatever division I get to, is to tell the paramedic when I get there. So I told the paramedic, and this was 4 days later, this was October the 31st when I left. This was November the 4th before they seen me. Anyway, they sent me downstairs and I seen a doctor. His name was Dr. Roman. Dr. Roman examined me, and I had no idea that when you say, when you talk about police brutality, that they have to report it to their supervisor. So he reported it to the supervisor, and that's what started the ball to roll. 6 months later, I met an officer where they don't even have the officer's professional standards no more. It's something else now. Anyway, her name was Sharon Tom. She come to visit me, and she asked me, could I identify the detectives that had did that to me, and I told her, yeah. And so she come back 2 weeks later, and I was able to pick them out. Anyway, I had a suppressing hearing. I lost. You know, I was going to lose the suppressing hearing. Anyway, I went to trial, and I was sentenced to 50 years in the Illinois Department of Correction. I was 22 years old with 50 years. How do you think I felt? People ask me, how did you feel? How do you think I felt? I had no feelings. There was nothing to feel. I was 22 years old and didn't know what I was going to do. Didn't know how I was going to survive in the penitentiary for all of those years. I think about that. I think about all the individuals that are still, I'm home now, but I think about all the individuals that's still locked up. They still locked up. And it's time for them to come home. I'm talking about it as it's what, 400? How many is it, Mark? 400? How many of us still locked up? 400? That are still locked up. So we got to fight, y'all. We got to get them out of that situation. And thank you.
Up next, we have Mark Clemens.
You're looking at a 16-year-old child that was taken down to a police station. Taken down to that police station in 1981. I was tortured. I was called Nigger Boy. That was my middle name. Being locked inside of the interrogation room for approximately 12, 13 hours, police extracted a confession from me through forms of torture, grabbing my genitals and my testicles, spoon feeding me information. However, it led to a confession. Not one witness testified against me. However, I was found guilty on the confession, given 4 natural life terms plus 30 years. This means that this is a system that had they never wanted me to be free. The key of it is what this society completely missed. Is this. I look at this brother, and I was looking for my other brother, Tyrone. When we come out as a result of being adolescents, when you go into the system, you haven't lived a life. So when you come back to this society, the same mistakes you made, it just plays catch up. So now people look at you differently. The key of it is this. We have a torturous police department that has shelled out almost $1 billion in, guess what, 10 years. So you mean to tell me that we shell out all of this money to cover up acts of systematic torture within police stations? I was taken to Area 3. What most people looked at was Area 2. Just recently, we attended the hearing for Jackie Wilson. Jackie Wilson and Andrew Wilson are two individuals that were accused of killing 2 Chicago police officers. Guess what? My personal opinion, if they're innocent or guilt, does not even matter. I do know this. They were tortured. Torture is a crime. And guess who allows the system to basically get away with that? It's us. It's us. Without really Ted Pearson, I would be still stuck in prison. All I had was a little old mother, and it was Ted, who would visit me all the way down at the Pontiac prison, who made fact sheets and distributed those fact sheets, who I'm talking about day and night, pressured to make sure that I got good counsel, Good counsel led to my freedom. What I am basically here to let you know, we had to fight like dogs, and we're still fighting like dogs. For anything, we have a Chicago Torture Justice Center in Chicago, right on 63rd Street. And won't me tell you, in fighting for that Chicago Torture Justice Center, guess what? We still got undercut, but we got to make it work. Now, they are providing some forms of psychological counseling. We have all sorts of different programs that we are trying to provide. It's up to the people to get up. It's up to the people. I kill myself going to court hearings. And one thing that I would like to say is that on this Tuesday, that in Antonio Porter's case and Christopher, they will be going to court on Tuesday, and I'm pretty sure they will share the information as to what courtroom that is in. But we have to support each other. But we cannot effectively support each other without love, without integrity, and understanding one thing. Yes, if we did have CPAC, yes, things would have been different, but we didn't have CPAC. So now we have well over 100 John Birch torture victims still in prison. We got over 57 Kavara victims still in prison, with the number constantly growing. So people need to understand that, yes, torture is a crime, but if you don't do nothing about it, guess what? It's going to come knocking on your door. Just like I told the young family over on the west side of Chicago, guess what? We can sit here and we can cry all day about your children being shot. What are you going to do to prevent them from being shot before it occurs? What are you going to do to prevent wrongful convictions before it occurs? And in closing, I do want to bring to the attention about Benny Lopez. Benny Lopez is in prison, and Martha is his significant other. But when we tell you, we got to come together, and we got to start to learn how to mobilize together. I'm working on a photo project, and this is a project to tell about really what is going on in the city of Chicago amongst police officers and amongst your community. Want me tell you, listen here, please participate with this program, because want me tell you, I'm just going to tell you like I know. Once this stuff is over with, you're going to beg. Once I die, people can't call me no more. I'm dead. So think about that. Thank you, Ted, for everything that you did for me.
If you have a question, we ask that you speak at the microphone. This is being recorded, so please speak on the microphone. I'll open the floor to any questions.
I said they were doing it behind closed doors. Now they are doing it. They are shooting you and getting away with it.
Hello, everyone. My name is Felicia. And 20 years ago, I was taken to 51st. I don't have a question. I was taken to 51st, and I was put in a situation. It's not a day that don't go by that I don't think about. I had to tell a story that wasn't true. I wrote a statement that wasn't true. I stepped in front of the jury and told a story that wasn't true. And y'all don't understand. It hurts to make a lie on somebody. To lie. I lied because the way that they treated me, they treated me like I had did the crime. They threatened me. They took me in a room. And for me, just wanted to just be over with. I just did what they wanted me to do. I knew it wasn't right, but I was scared. And I didn't know, they knew I had kids. But when I got home, they went through my house. They went through the pictures. It's a hurting feeling. And I've been living with this for 20 years. It caused me so much pain. I have headaches. It took a toll on me. I told, it's not a day I don't go by. It hurts so bad to see my cousin behind bars doing a crime he didn't do. Just because of me, lied, because I was scared. Please, one thing I learned from this, tell the truth. Whether you're scared or you're not, tell the truth. Because in the long run, it'll make the whole situation so much better. Please. And that's the only thing. My kids is 24, and my youngest is 22, and I'm just not telling them the story, what really happened to my cousin. They didn't know they was locked up because of me. They think it's something else. But I had to sit down and really tell them what really happened. Because if you don't teach your kids, trust me, the system can get to them. You have to teach them. You have to let them know what's right and what's wrong. And telling the truth is right. And I'm 44 years old, and I've been carrying this on my shoulder for the last 20 years. Y'all just don't understand. It has taken a toll on me. I just want for him to be free. I just want to get my story out there. I want somebody to, you know, able to help me, you know, so I can just don't. And I can't never think of the detective name. That's all I remember is the big white guy. Oh, my God. Y'all just don't know how terrified I was. Y'all just don't know.
I'm forever your soldier. You got soldier, you got soldier.
Thank you. And I had put this mother through a lot, a whole lot. And every time I see her, I cry. I don't want to look at her because I hurt not just my cousin. I hurt my whole family. But I tell her all the time, I don't see how you can forgive me for what I did. I just can't see it. But teach your kids. Teach them. Teach them while they're young. Because the system will get them. The system will get them. Thank you.
All right, the next question, please. Go ahead.
So I was wondering that you guys are all survivors, and you guys have trauma, and you guys want to help people. So my question was, do you think you helping people will help you overcome what you're going through or what you went through?
You know what? It will help you. It'll encourage you and give you the strength to be able to help somebody else. Because everybody's story is not the same. Hearing my story is not the same as his. But it's still torture. So whatever I say, it could be beneficial to that person sitting over there. You never know. But in order for them to be able to get help, you got to say it. You got to put it out there. And whenever I get the chance to speak, I don't just talk for Gerald Reed. Because Gerald Reed is not the only one that's in prison. It's a many men and a many women. And it's not just color. There are poor whites in there too. So whatever you can do to help somebody, say it. Because you never know.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
For a long time, I didn't want to help nobody because I was so mad, so hurt, so scared because the police were supposed to be on our side. They were supposed to protect us. So I was afraid. I had nightmares. To this day, I get counseled because I still have those nightmares. I had took a breathing test. They made me stay overnight. And they had called me back because during my breathing test, sleeping, while I was sleeping, I stopped breathing. So now I sleep with a CPAP, or whatever they call that machine. So now I sleep with one of those because I still had those nightmares. They had to call me back in and I had to come and get the machine. I didn't want to help nobody. I was so angry. And then when I finally start digging up, seeing that the past, like these guys, they've been locked up for so long, and I didn't have the slightest idea that these guys had been going, had them been through what my baby had went through and what I was going through. And when I got to digging and digging and got a letter from my son to go see Bertha and them, which was them, I started going to the meetings. And it took me 3 months, before I even got up and started speaking. And then when I did get up and speak, you couldn't hear nothing I said because I got the I couldn't even talk because it was hurting so bad, and it still hurt. So when I did the first thing, when I was asked to testify, could my son testify to help somebody else, it felt so good. It felt so good. It started taking pressure off my chest. And even with him, because he have nightmares, and he's getting counseled right now too. So his kids, so it's yeah, you help, when you help people, when you do that, you help people. And he did it 3-4 times, come and testify. And I kept getting mad, because you know what I was getting mad for? I kept saying, well, why they getting out and he ain't getting out? He testifying for them. They had all the proof in the world. Paper stacked this high from way down there to way down here to the same police officers, and they still was working on the force. So when you help somebody, it helps you, and then it helps a whole lot of more people.
Next question.
Hello, my name is Andrea Thompson. I wanted to just quickly state to the young lady, your niece, I don't know if she's still here, but it seems like to me that she's not responsible. The police are really responsible because they put her in a compromising position. And she's bearing the weight of that, but she really wasn't left with too much of a choice. I grew up in Bronzeville on 47th Street, and I remember all of my family's over there, and I would hang out with my brothers and my cousins, and it's a police officer that's still on the force right now that would always tell them, move around, y'all can't be right here. And I was always loudmouth, very outspoken. So one day I told him, I said, you know, it's a nice day outside. We should be able to come outside and hang out. Can you hang out and enjoy the weather in your neighborhood? And he's a black officer, very nice officer, but he said, you are so full of hope that doesn't exist in this community. He said, there are so many laws on the book that I could arrest you right now and pull any one of them out. And when he said that to me, I was like, you know, we don't really have any rights. And how can we fight against these people when they're so big and powerful? How can we, so small and without resources or a lot of money or anything, how can we fight against these people? And so I always wanted to be a lawyer. I said, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to fight against bad police. And so when I went to college, all my mentors said, well, you know, you got to be a corporate lawyer so you could get a lot of money because they make a lot of money. And so I said in one of my classes, I'm going to be a corporate lawyer because I want to make a lot of money. And my professor said, you can't be a corporate lawyer. And when he said that, I was even more zealous about being a corporate lawyer. What do you mean? I can do anything I want to. And he was like, you can't be a corporate lawyer because you care too much about the people. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, if you have to represent a company, a tobacco company that says they don't target the black community and youth in their promotions, or if you have to say that the police didn't torture this person, would you be able to stand and represent the police versus your people if you had to make that decision? And I said, no, I'll probably quit my job that day. And he said, that's probably the reason why you don't need to be a corporate lawyer. You need to look at other options. And so then I said, okay, let me look at a public service lawyer, people that deal with nonprofits and all this. And they don't make a lot of money. They make the least amount of money. The people who represent the corporations make the most amount of money, and the people who represent the people make the least. So I was like, wow, okay, so I'm going to go to school, I'm going to get in all this debt, and then I'm going to get out to make less than I made before I went to law school. That's not making sense. And so when I applied to law school, I applied to Notre Dame, and I got accepted, and everybody was like, yeah, there's not that many black people at Notre Dame. It's a good thing. And when I would tell people that I got accepted to Notre Dame, they would give me this reaction, like, oh, my God, how did you do that? And I thought that was such an honor to be, like, admitted to this Ivy League school. But they didn't give me any money, and I was like, wow, you must have read my personal statement. I told you I was broke. And so this is not even in my reach to pay $65,000 a year to you, and I don't want to be in bed with Sallie Mae like that. And so I applied for all these different schools, and this school in Portland accepted me, gave me a scholarship. Long story short, I had never been to Portland. And I didn't know what my Portland experience was going to be like. I just knew that I wanted to leave Chicago with my son, and I wanted to be safe, and I wanted to go to law school. So they gave me money. We went to Portland. And I didn't realize, because I didn't do my research, I just left. I didn't realize that Portland was created to be a white oasis. It was a sundown town. It's not that many blacks there. And just as much as I was fleeing the racism here, it was more of it there to meet me when I got there. And so eventually I was like, you know what? I'm not really created to be a part of this system. How can I be a part of this system and create change? And it hit me one day because this white dude in my class, and in most of my classes I was the only black person. And they would always ask me these questions as if I was the speaker for the representation of the whole black race. And I got tired of it because in my mind, I was like, dude, I'm barely here. I got to get my son out of school. My rent need to be paid and I'm hungry. I don't know what you talking about everything that you want me to answer, but it's too much pressure. And so he came to me one time and he was laughing. And he said, you know, if you want to kill somebody, kill a black woman because she has the least amount of value under the law. And I was trying to not let them see that it agitated me, but it did. And I wondered if there was any validity to what he was saying, and to my surprise, it was actually very valid. So then I started talking to people, researching. I found out that as an officer of the courts, it's my first duty to the court, not to the people. No matter what it is, it's my first duty to the court. And so I left law school and started a business. But now I know, after hearing all these stories, listening to these mothers crying, mothers having nightmares, and this woman lost her baby. Now I know that eventually, at the end of all this that I'm doing right now, I got to find my way back to law school.
Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Rosemary Kate. This is my cousin, Valerie Neal.
Hello.
Her brother is there at Stateville Correctional Center, also along with my son, Antonio Porter. They gave my son 71 years at 100%. He was wrongly convicted. He didn't even do the crime. So he have court coming up, and it's at 26 in California at 9 o'clock on June 19th at 9 o'clock at Judge Hill. Judge Hill. At Judge Hill in room 600. I just want everyone to come out and try to support us. Also, Kathleen Zellner. Yes. Yeah. She took his case on a pro bono.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank God. Also, my cousin Christopher Neal, he has court the same day. And his courtroom is in room 306 at 9 o'clock also. He was convicted of a crime of double murder, home invasion. and wrongly convicted, and they gave him natural life, and he was 16 years old.
John Burge. Christopher Neal.
And I just want to thank you all. I don't have any questions because I can ID to some of you all where you've been as far as being incarcerated in 92. And I made it through, and I didn't stop there. And I just want you all to know that it's still hope, and God is still on the verge of doing whatever he need to do. Sometimes we go to jail, it saved me. You know what I'm saying? We never know what his plan is, but we know everything is in divine order. And when it's time for you to come home, he will release us. But sometimes he save us from whatever we don't know. And we just got to keep hope alive and continue meeting up, not just today, every day. Because, I mean, we at war with the police because they out here killing our kids in our face and then getting away with it. So it's time to go to war with the police. I work for the city of Chicago, and I do not like none of them. I'm not in no political, you know, and I asked God to give me another job, and I will be on it. And I've been on this one ever since. And I know how they work, the judges, the everybody that is in the bed, you know what I'm saying, the counselor. Everyone is one on one accord, and we fighting. So we need more people to stand up and fight, not just for the day, not just because my brother's going to court, but my cousin asked me to come today, and I have been to some meetings before, and I'm not doing nothing that's important today. Then kids are dying. I lost my son at 19, and God has still been good, you know what I'm saying? So we just have to continue to come in on the same accord on one, and we need to start today. Yes, yes, get rid of the corruption. It's, the whole city is corrupted. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not afraid to tell it. I'm corrupted with them. In a good way, though, because, hey, we got to do what we have to do. Stand up. As CPAC, as y'all say.
CPAC.
We ready to fight. Thank you. Love you all.
CPAC. Okay, I'll be brief. So I'm Alex. Marissa, right over there, we are with First Defense Legal Aid. We provide free lawyers to people who are in police custody in Chicago. So first and foremost, I just want to say that we have cards. We will hand them out. So if you guys, we need to spread the word. As of 2017, only 1.5% of people in police custody in Chicago had a lawyer. 1.5% of people in police custody. That's ridiculous. Yes. And we're free. We will go at 1 o'clock in the morning. We'll go at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. We will go whenever. I will be there. I'm an attorney. I do station house visits. So please spread the word. We'll give you as many cards as you want so you can hand them out and give them to the community so people know to give us a call. We also do Know Your Rights workshops, and that's something we're really going to be focusing on so that people know.
I want to say something to that. I like what you say right there, because there's a lot of people that have been coming to me. Something just happened today in Hyde Park. Some guys that got shot, that got murdered down, and they called me this morning, and I'm supposed to be over that now. That's what I'm kind of nervous about, too, y'all. Yes. They called me this morning, and I don't know what's going on, but I hope a cop ain't shot them down. Main thing is what you talking about lawyers. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that, you know, these police is putting these crimes and stuff on these kids and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they trying to make it like it's a black-on-black crime out here.
Talk about it, brother.
You hear what I'm saying, ma'am?
Doing it for years.
And the thing is that, ma'am, I need your information. Your information is very important in these communities.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm going to be in contact with you.
Absolutely.
Because I have a lot.
Right. Absolutely.
So my name is Tyrone.
Tyrone. I will get in contact with you, and I will be around. If anybody wants to have Know Your Rights workshops, please, I will be around. Let's exchange contact information, and then we can plan that. So I do have a question for you guys. So as somebody who does have access to people who are in police custody, what is one thing that you wish... just one hope of comfort that I could do for them besides telling them their rights and getting down their information and what happened. Is there something that I can do there to make them feel just a little bit better or safer?
Are you speaking of people that are arrested?
So, yeah, when we go to the police station, so as an attorney who goes to the police station to visit people while they're, and we give them their rights. I mean, the police are supposed to give them their rights, but we have them sign, like, what's called the Declaration of Rights form that we create. So it says, like, and it says, I will not talk. I want a lawyer. I have a lawyer. And so from then on, the police cannot interrogate them without our presence there. So if they do, we get their stuff suppressed in the future. So that's kind of what we do. But just since we have that opportunity with them, to be in that room with them while they're in custody before their bond hearing, I'm just wondering, on a personal level, if there's anything that you guys think might be good.
Is there any way that you all can work with the people that are incarcerated to let them know their rights? As for, 'cause my son, I didn't know what my son was. Mm-hmm. I found out through someone else that my son had been arrested. And when I did find out, then I started going to the first police station where they took him to. When I got there, they had transferred him somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
The following day, because I was working, following day I went there to 39th in California. They had moved him again. Mm-hmm. But this time, they wouldn't even tell me where they took him to. So we are wishing that it comes available where they can make sure that the people that are arrested can get it out to their family members or somebody, mm-hmm, to let them know where they are.
Okay.
Because that's very unfair.
And just like a prime example, when I was just sitting there for the Jason McDyke, and I couldn't talk to my family for 3 days, almost a week, and he left me there. And I asked for a phone call, and it just left me right there. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't talk with you or nobody. All it did just left me plain zip. I think it's this here. The solution would be for y'all to be there,
okay,
on site. That would be right there. On site would be the answer. When you know it's a crime and you know the crime didn't happen, be on site. That would make that person happy, because you know you got to be psyched right there, and that person know you got the conference there.
Hello, my name is Andrew Brown. I'm 19 years old, and I just want to thank y'all for coming out today, because I learned something new. I never knew that this was going on in our community, and you know, I think it's sad that it's a lot of my friends also that probably don't know about this either, that it's a lot of people that's suffering that you all today, but you all are so mentally powerful that you came out today and share your information with us, and I think that's great. And I thank you for that.
Thank you, brother.
I feel with the many of us that is happened to, this room should be overfilled with us people. Period. Because that's the only way we can really stop them, if a whole lot of us don't give up and just come out, or the ones that don't know, because we always lack of knowledge. And when you don't know nothing, you don't be around. And then you don't want to get involved until it happens, until it knock on your door. So.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing, too, that I wanted to talk about, to bring to my question. You know, it seems that it's police officers that are policing our neighborhoods that are actually not from the neighborhood. And, you know, they are not people that might not be our skin color. You know, they just not, we don't know them that's around the neighborhood. And I think that, you know, what do you guys think that we should hire more people from our neighborhoods as police officers so that they can create, like, healthy neighborhoods for people, because they actually, you know the kids and they're able to mentor the kids as well? You know, that can help.
That's what CPAC is moving for, community control of the police. You know, And young brother, it's the whole history about Chicago police officer. You know, I have family members who were Chicago police officers, 30, 40 years. But the stuff that they doing now, they've been doing it. You know how they do something to somebody? Kill them, take them to this neighborhood, so it could be some type of, then they say games, like a, you know, revolving door to kick something off. And they always doing that at the time when these cats right here do something. Try to throw you off. You understand what I'm saying? But just do your history, brother. All right?
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having
me. Thank you.
You know what, young man? We need your age to speak up. We need your age. Okay? Yeah, you are the future. And without you, where are we going? Our future is gone, and we are destroying each other. We need you, okay? We glad you're here.
Thanks for coming out, brother. CPAC.
Hello, I'm Curtis Harris. I'm with the Advanced Youth Leadership Power based down at Assets Living, and we've been working on the bill called Stephon's Law in honor of Stephon Watts, who got killed by Calumet City police officers. I'm going to make it short to respect time. So, if any of you here are family of Laquonia Greer, what we're working on is I have a one pager of Stephon's Law to share. It's a bill for alternative transportation of those with disabilities, as opposed to being transferred by law enforcement, who has little or no training, and they are quick to shoot. McDonald had a mental illness. Queer, mental illness. Stephon Watts, autism. And Stephon Watts' home was coded, indicating that a person had a mental disability. We don't have that in the Chicago Police Department, where a person's home with a mental or developmental disability is coded. And certified crisis training, not enough hours. We need more than that. And that's all I have to say.
Hello, my name's Terry Rudd, and I'm a member of CPAC, and I think it's important to try and take control over these police that go around and kill our class, whether they're black, white, Latin. That's their job. Their job is to terrorize us. And they'll continue doing it, like many of you said. And thank you so much for sharing your passionate stories. But this is going to continue. It's going to continue because the system is corrupt to its core. The police are here to terrorize us and to destroy our class and our communities. Our communities would be much better if they had mental health clinics, if they had jobs, if they had decent schools, none of which they are ready to give our communities, right? So, what? Right. It's the whole system that's corrupt. But 2 weeks ago, they shot and killed a young black man on 47th Street. My question to all of you and everyone in this room is that this section, this community, is one of the communities that are marginalized by this capitalist system that cares nothing about them. So I want to ask you if you will all come to 47th Street and Prairie and show those workers in that community that they have support, no matter what color they are, that they matter. They are people, too. They are part of our class. And when they shoot one of us in the back, we will be there, just like those cops mobilize when one of theirs goes down. And it's not enough of them going down, if you ask me personally. But they'll come to the funeral, they'll come to the hospital. We should go to 47th and Prairie next Saturday. The CPAC, Progressive Labor Party, all these groups that are in this room, we got to go and let our community know that we support them. Will you come? My question.
Hey, I need to follow it up because she was out there on 47th when we took a stand. Yeah, of course I'm going. Stop playing. I'm going today if I feel like it. No, because this is serious. When they came over there to move the table, right, and I started snapping on the police like, man, bro, this we ain't going. The community stood. You know what I'm saying? They stood. They didn't know us, but they felt us. So even though we might not know each other in this room by name, I done worked with the Freedom People right here before in Inglewood and stuff like that. So even though we might not know each other by name, we feel each other in here. Even though y'all might not know their name, you might not know her son's name, it's just a picture up there, but you feel it. And I felt something over there on 47 where they was fighting them police back. I felt something over there on 47 where they shot that brother in the back of the head. I felt his spirit still over there. And if y'all go to Antoine Alexander or Hood Hope Movement, you will see the viral video where our people took a stand to protect that sister over there.
All right, so that concludes the Q&A section. But I just want to say real quick, because I think going to 47th and Prairie, you know, that's something that folks can do. Another thing that folks can do is to join this organization, is to become a member of the Chicago Alliance. So that way, when something like this happens, when things pop off, we have an organization that can step up and act. If it's quick, because we are coming on time.
And another thing, too, is it takes us to vote for certain people. And I know the judge that sentenced my son, that's a torture judge, he was the state's attorney that put Leroy Orange and a few of the other guys that was with him on death row. He should never even became a judge. So if we learn who our aldermans are and get on them, because a lot of these aldermans, they've been in the office when all this was going on, and ain't nothing happened yet. So all that stuff they've been doing ain't working, so we need